Margaret Atwood, you'll be coming to Buffalo on Friday. Thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us.
My pleasure.
Your best-known works, of course, are Tales of Dystopia, and while many are set in Canada, many down here in the States will draw parallels to American social and political issues and climates. You've pointed out that your most famous novels, they're speculative fiction, not science fiction, as you insisted, are not really creating anything new. These are situations or themes that have already happened in history. That being said, what you're seeing down here in the States, does anything down here still surprise you?
You know, who isn't surprised on a daily basis? It's a surprise a minute down there. So The Handmaid's Tale, as you know, is set there, and Canada is the place that people are trying to escape to, and that, too, has a number of historical precedents, and we are, in fact, right now seeing people doing that. So it is a very strange period of time that we're living in.
Handmaid's Tale, of course, is looked upon by many as an important modern feminist work. But I've read your previous remarks, including an essay a few years ago in The Guardian, where you suggest that it's not necessarily entirely feminist. Both men and women are subject to various levels of status and power. So is it fair to call Handmaid's Tale a truly feminist work?
Well, who knows? Because there are 50 shades of feminism. You have to really specify which one you're talking about. But if you mean that it's a work in which the treatment of women is central, yes, then it is. If you mean that it's a work in which all men are having a fine old time and all women are not, then that is not true, because it's a totalitarianism. And when we look at totalitarianisms through the ages, you see that, in fact, quite a few men have a bad time within them. So that is true of the world of Handmaid's Tale as well, and that is why there is a resistance movement that includes both men and women. They're resisting a totalitarianism that happens to include a specific kind of treatment of women.
Of course, the resistance now down here in the States is known as the Me Too movement, and the other key phrases.
That is one part of the resistance, but it seems to be quite multifaceted. For instance, what about the children protesting gun laws?
There's another good point there. There are the guns. Never again is one of the popular hashtags. Time is up. Are those perhaps some of the surprises that you're observing down here in the States, that people are finally speaking up after years and years?
I think when pressure builds up over time, and there are no society-sanctioned ways of relieving that pressure by getting some form of balance and fair treatment, then you're going to see protest movements. And we saw a couple of pretty explosive ones over the past year, actually more than one explosive one. And explosive movements like that are a symptom of pressure buildup. So how is society going to fix the conditions that led to that pressure buildup in the first place?
And the one that I did not yet acknowledge, but definitely should, is Black Lives Matter.
That one, too. And I think that was one of the earlier ones. That's been going for some years.
Now, Gilead, in your tale, it's portrayed as a Christian theonomy, and many will draw parallels to modern, the modern Christian right here in the States. But at the same time, some will say, well, they may claim to be Christian, but they don't espouse Christian values, and that seemed to be what was suggested in Handmaid's Tale. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's quite fair, but of course it depends on what it's like. What do you mean by feminist? What do you mean by Christian? So if you mean by Christian a religion that puts at its center things like the golden rule and love your neighbor as yourself, then these people are not Christian.
Now, of course, Handmaid's Tales enjoyed a bit of a comeback in the form of a miniseries on Hulu. It's also been an opera on stage, Alias
it's
Grace.
Not just a miniseries.
Yeah. Well,
to go into season two. How long will this go on?
And there's a good point there. But it's also not the first of your works to be produced. Alias Grace was released on Netflix last fall. And yet, many times, authors get nervous when they see their works being adapted for screen. Stephen King, for example, has made it clear he absolutely loathes Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, even though it's considered one of the more popular films. Do you get concerned when someone approaches you to say, I would like to turn your work into something for stage or screen, and how closely do you follow it as the production develops?
Okay, so the first thing you do is you have a conversation with them to get an idea of how they want to approach it. And if it's not in keeping with your vision, you say no. But of course, it can happen that you have that conversation and then other factors enter in and things change. I happen to have been very, very lucky in that the showrunner of The Handmaid's Tale, his name is Bruce Miller, has kept the original set of guidelines, and the original set of guidelines was nothing goes into this that has not got a precedent in real life. So he's stuck to that. He's also, the writing room, the writing team has built the world out so that we can follow characters behind the scenes, which you couldn't in the novel. And they've also updated it so that the past of the characters in the show is our present, which allows him to be much more contemporary. So in 1985, when the book was published, there was no internet. There were also no lattes, if you can imagine such a thing. There were no cell phones. So all of that has been updated to our moment. And of course, those are some of the things that are taken away from the women in Gilead, along with reading. No more reading. It causes such trouble.
Which actually segues to my next question about the things that did not exist when you first wrote it and now today. And let's talk about Scribbler Moon. You completed it. You turned it into the Free Library Project. But we're not going to get to see it in our lifetime. I'm not counting on you to give me any spoilers. But, you know, a century from now, when, you know, the world then will certainly be different than the world today. Are you confident your work will be able to withstand that lengthy test of time before it's being read the first time?
Well, who knows? So this is a project called Future Library Norway, in which each year for 100 years, an author will submit a manuscript. The only copies will be held in the Future Library Norway. And it has to be made of words, no images. And during that 100 years, a forest that they have planted will grow. And in year 100, all of the boxes with the manuscripts will be opened, and enough trees will be cut from the forest to make the paper for the Future Library of Norway anthology. So I was year one. I think we're now going to be year four. And it's authors all over the world. If it's a smaller language, they're going to put a dictionary into that library just in case the language goes extinct.
Is it tough, though, to know that what you've turned in, what you had to work on, will not be seen by anyone in your lifetime or even for a couple of generations?
Oh, I think it's quite wonderful. So either you were the kind of child who buried things in the backyard hoping that somebody unknown would dig them up, or you are not that child. And I was certainly a barrier of things. So it's like a time capsule. It's a somewhat different kind of time capsule. And I think the pressure is going to be on the people in year 95 and around that time, because they will still be alive when their boxes are opened.
You'll be coming to Buffalo to appear at the University of Buffalo's Center for the Arts. Without giving away the plot, so to speak, what do you anticipate discussing while you're down here?
Well, you know what everybody wants to talk about right now. The Handmaid's Tale. Will it come true?
Do you consider that your most important work?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, you can't ever tell that. And the author is the last person who should make judgments like that, because it isn't finally the author who decides that. It's readers, and it's readers at any given time. So it's the most important work right now. And it's the most important work right now because of all the pushback that has been going on against women's rights. That's why you're seeing women in countries all over the world turning up in these costumes and sitting silently as a silent protest while legislatures enact laws about them.
And
so
yes,
it's an immediately understood symbol.
Yeah, indeed, and it certainly does raise eyebrows, and people get the context. But of course, there is the pushback, and you know, there are some that they'll mock it, they'll try to push it back. But tell me about how women have held up to the challenges of this pushback, especially under our current social and political climate down in Washington.
I know, it's amazing. So if you had said even 10 years ago that you would be seeing a climate like this, nobody would have believed you. And when I published the book, although some people were talking this way then, they didn't have the power to do those things. And now they do. So when I first published it, people were saying, oh, you know, calm down, Margaret, that's not going to happen. But things have changed.
Is the same thing happening up in Canadian society?
No. It is a different country, and we have a very smiley prime minister at the moment who replaces one who is not so smiley. And the one who is not so smiley, the previous one, definitely was rolling back women's rights, but this one is promoting them. So they've just raised status of women from a department to a ministry, for instance, and he made a point of having a gender-equal cabinet, and he's putting a bunch of money into women's organizations, whereas the previous one went in the defunding direction. So it's a different mindset up here at the moment, but as we have seen, things can change very rapidly.
Margaret Atwood will be appearing at the University of Buffalo in the Humanities to the Rescue. It's been an honor and a pleasure to take some time to speak with you. Thank you so much.
And a pleasure for me, and thank you.